take me across and wash all my troubles away. Like that lucky old sun, give me nothing to do but roll around. Heaven all day.
Would buy a giant jigger of respectable rye.
Piano players in the honky-tonks would have to work on a slide.
One tune was known to a few, some steady habitués too.
So the word of mouth spread around the South.
Very entre-new. You better dig that jazz band ball, 'cause it's the ball of them all.
Alrighty, alrighty, here we are. This is the Westmoreland Naturalist Hour on KWMR 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, and 92.3 San Geronimo Valley. Coming up is our show here, the Westmoreland Naturalist Hour. And let's play a little intro song. Here we go. Okay, band's back together. Here we are on KWMR. How you both doing?
Fantastic.
Doing great. Nice. How about you?
I'm good. I'm excited about this episode.
Me too.
I got so many questions about fog. Yeah, it's all about fog today, people. We're going to learn about fog.
A little sneak preview.
Yeah.
Before we jump into that, Liz, do you got something for us this morning?
I do. KWMR would like to thank its signal sponsor, Palace Market, locally owned and operated in downtown Point Reyes Station. Palace Market is a full-service independent grocer offering groceries, local and organic products, freshly prepared meals, housewares, and wellness items for everyday life on the coast. More information at palacemarket.com.
All right. And might as well jump into some weather here, too.
Yeah, let's do it.
Looks what like it's got? A little bit cooler this week than last week.
Still
nice and sunny. Looks like our highs will be in the upper 60s at the beginning of the week and then cooling off by the end of the week with highs in the low 60s to upper 50s for the weekend. And our lows will be in the low 50s at nighttime pretty much throughout the time. So, and then for folks that are heading out to the water, your tide's from Marshall, California. Our next low tide is 1.4 feet at 10:16 a.m., and our next high tide is 5.2 feet at 4:19 p.m. Now I'll pass it off to Liz to introduce today's guest.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. Our guest today is Sarah Baguskas, and she is an associate professor in the School of Environment at SFSU and started there in 2017 after a postdoc at UCSC studying coastal fog and strawberries. Before that, she earned a PhD in the Department of Geography at UCSB, where she studied coastal fog and Bishop Pine Forest on Santa Cruz Island, which we're going to get into details about how they differ from our Bishop Pines here. But welcome to the show, Sarah. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah, we hear you great.
Awesome.
Great.
Nice and clear. Yeah, this is I'm excited to talk about this just because it's such a big part of our lives out here in West Marin.
Yeah.
Well, and how appropriate for August, right?
August. Yeah. I know.
August.
It's been living up to its
name. Yeah, we should
out here.
Just do away with August.
Yeah.
Well, I love it. What first drew you to studying fog?
Good question. Yeah, I was actually born and raised in Philadelphia. Okay. And that's important for this story because I never experienced coastal fog growing up. And then I went out to college in Oregon and we did this field trip to Santa Cruz Island to volunteer and, do plant surveys. And I took this hike in the morning and I was enveloped in fog. I'm like, what is this? Right? It was this amazing, us East Coasters are just like absolutely dumbfounded by the wilds of the West kind of thing. And, yeah, I was just taken by its beauty and the ephemeral nature. And I also noticed lichens were changing color and beating up with water. And it's just really beautiful. And so I got into it because I just fell in love with the phenomenon itself. Mm-hmm. And then I learned there was a path to actually make it a part of my life and science. Mm-hmm. And so here I am.
Nice.
Whatever, 20 plus years later, really more than 20.
Well, I love that because, we're looking for fog research for something that's like so common in all of our lives out here. There isn't as much research as I thought there would be going on out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, here we are.
Exactly. I'm glad that you've changed
it. The time is now.
Exactly, right?
I'd love to start off talking about getting a little bit of the scientific details on what creates fog and why we get it out here. Like, so how do we get the fog we experience out here on the West Coast?
Yeah. It's dominantly this summertime event. Mm-hmm. And that's because there's a couple of key ingredients in fog formation that we have during the summer that's not as dominant in the winter months. So mainly we have this migration of a high pressure system closer to the California coast. And a high pressure system is an area, this is synoptic large scale, is an area of warm, subsiding air that warms as it descends. And so you have this warm air interacting with cool air over the ocean. So as the air mass descends, it creates winds, which promote upwelling, right? Mm-hmm. With the California cones, we have upwelling, and upwelling, of course, like cools the ocean significantly. And so you have this interaction between warm air and cool ocean. And so the water vapor in the air reaches a temperature where it can't hold the gaseous phase of water and it condensates. So you have condensation and then there's nuclei, like from bubbles bursting over the ocean, there's condensation nuclei, little things around which the water vapor condenses, forming the marine layer. Mm. And you might see the marine layer right offshore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, when's it going to come get us?
Yeah.
And a driver for fog rolling in is warming temperatures inland.
Right.
So, right, we have these summer, like, whatever. Not very far, you have inland California roasting, right? And so that warm air rising and the cool air from the coast kind of fills that void. And so there's this almost like, imagine this sucking effect, mm-hmm. or advection of the air mass onshore. And so, the where you see fog, the duration of fog events, They're all a function of this temperature pressure gradient between the coast inland. It's a function of the orientation of the coast to the prevailing winds.
Oh,
so
okay.
right if I actually live in Santa Cruz, and so sometimes, like in May, when I'm coming from work back to Santa Cruz, San Francisco to Santa Cruz, right, it's like fog soup in the city. And then I hit like the Pigeon Point or something, or Waddell, and there's this change in orientation, and it's like it's clear skies. Right. So, and we all, I think this is one of the amazing parts of it, is that you can be just outside and see that edge of fog, and it's really dynamic.
It is dynamic indeed.
Yeah.
Is the term fog burning off like appropriate? So when we get that the fog coming in, kind of that from the heat inland. And so
yeah.
The fog pushes in, and then, you know, a lot of times in the afternoon you get this I guess we call it the fog burning off, right? As the day progresses.
That's what, I mean, that's what I say.
Yeah.
I say like it's burning off, and what's happening is that the temperature is rising and is just dissipating is causing the water to change phase. So you have the liquid phase to gas, and so you get this dissipation of fog. I would
okay.
still say burning.
Yeah,
off.
Okay, that is appropriate.
It's intuitive.
Gotcha.
I mean,
gotcha.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't know if I would say, "Oh, the fog is dissipating." Maybe you could change the lingo.
Well, as long as it seems appropriate. I wasn't sure if the term kind of matched the phenomena, and it sounds like it does. I mean, it's really you're breaking up the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is coastal fog different from inland fog? Is there?
Yeah, there's radiation fog that's different than coastal fog, and yeah, there's. Different driving forces
okay, yeah.
causing radiation.
Same phenomena, but,
and
but
so
different.
It's again related to temperature gradients, and like in the Central Valley, it'll just like tule fog will just fit there. For long periods of time. But one thing that is important with coastal fog is that, and what keeps this low stratus cloud closer to the ground, is there's a strong inversion layer. And so this the descending air basically puts a lid or a cap onto the height of that cloud. And so it's, I was actually just in Chile in May for coastal fog, International Coastal Fog Workshop, which was really cool. And we got to see, go to the Atacama Coastal Fog Desert. And the inversion layer there is really strong. And so you get this like sheet of fog, and it's a little less turbulent than we get here. So there's
okay.
Coastal fog occurs in many, many Mediterranean areas around the world, Chile and California being.
So the inversion layer is like, you're talking about sitting on top of the fog, like a cap
mm-hmm.
on top. Okay. Because you never really see fog kind of like just a few feet off the ground.
Well, you do the tule, we call it tule fog.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Like sitting over the mud flats.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but like just like, you know, you have a layer of fog, but there's underneath is no fog.
Oh, you just lay down underneath it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what, I don't know. I always notice like when fog is it's either sitting on the ground but it's never just a couple feet off the ground, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends where you are.
Okay, yeah. Maybe. Okay. Yeah. I just haven't experienced that phenomenon.
I'm like,
before.
I don't know that you're the fog expert here, Seamus.
No, I'm definitely not the fog expert.
I'll just say, no, over water.
No, but
right
these, but you. But
sounds so silly to say, but.
No, but so here's my take on this expert business is that I like learn about fog and kind of the science of it, and I do live in the fog, but I would say that if you've spent a good chunk of your life living in the fog, you inherently know its behavior, and we're kind of like each bring expertise to understanding the phenomenon. And I'm actually really interested in like people's perception of fog and their experiences with it, because I think it's a really valuable part of learning.
Yeah, and you get to know it intimately in your particular areas.
For like, sure.
We do kayaking trips, so we're very used to like when the fog is going to come in. And even before it comes in, we're like warning people to put their stuff away. You're about to get wet. They're like, what are you talking about? And then like 10 minutes later, they're like, oh, how'd you know that? Like, well.
One of my favorite things out where we live is seeing the fog kind of – we have it, you know, the as the Point Reyes National Seashore Peninsula gets a little higher kind of above Inverness and the middle end of the park. It gets caught in the ridgeline, and so it'll just kind of start to creep over, but a lot of times won't make it, you know. And so it just you just have this beautiful layer just sitting on the ridgeline,
On the top,
which it gives this very it's very aesthetically pleasing.
Yes, yeah, it is. It's beautiful. And it really matters. Right. It matters that it's consistent, you know, it matters for the ecosystems that there's like that it hangs out on that cloud top, and the plants that live up in that on the ridge line are like, you know, are banking.
Yeah, let's talk about that. the benefits and some of the species that really rely on fog and ecosystems that really rely on fog. I know it's true out here, you know. Mm-hmm. Especially in our dry summers, right? Is it how a lot of plants get moisture in the summer?
Yeah, so the iconic and kind of one of the species that has been studied the longest with respect to fog plant interactions are the coast redwoods.
Right.
And so it's pretty safe to say that the redwoods would not be along the coast anymore if we didn't have fog. So there, Todd Dawson at UC Berkeley has led really just fascinating research on fog and redwoods for decades. And
he's going to be on our show next Monday or 2 Mondays.
Oh, no.
Actually.
Oh, okay.
That's
I don't want to.
No, it's okay. No, don't you worry.
We have a
full hour with him. So.
Oh, my gosh. That's so exciting.
That's why I felt so appropriate to have you so close to the show. I was like, oh, how nice.
Fogest. Fogest. Well, I'll steal his thunder a little bit, but he can go into
that's okay.
more, of course, that. In one of his articles, they found, I believe, that 30% of the annual water that the redwood use comes from summertime coastal fog, mainly through fog drip to the soil.
30%.
And so,
And they drink a lot of water.
Fact check next week. And they drink a lot of water. And they, you know, plants have mechanisms to, they use their stomates, their the pores on their leaves to control water loss.
Can you explain that a little
more? They have different degrees of sensitivity to, it's called stomatal regulation. So if a plant gets really stressed in terms of like water or heat, your listeners can't see my hands. my palms are open.
Right.
If a plant gets really water stressed, there's cues in the plant to be like, whoops, we the cost of keeping stomates open is losing water. The gain is that they get CO2. They're absorbing carbon and they need CO2 as the raw material for photosynthesis, for making sugars to live on. But water, when stomates are open, there's on a hot summer day, there's going to be a lot of transpiration or water moving from the leaf inside the leaf to the atmosphere. And so plants will close stomates. On foggy days, the we know, we feel it. It's cooler, it's wetter. The air isn't as thirsty for water from the surface, right? You can imagine like the atmosphere is a sponge. And so on a hot summer day, it's a dry sponge that's kind of easily wicking water away from the surface. But on a foggy day, it's like a wet, damp sponge. And so it has less driving force. And so we see less water loss from plants during foggy periods. And so it permits them to also keep their stomates open. So can photosynthesize and minimize water loss.
Interesting. I never heard of that phenomena before.
And your
Mix.
work is like focused on the fog plant interactions. So like that's one example with leaves on trees, but what are some other ways that maybe some different types of plants are adapted to foggy environments?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are plants, so it is tied to stomatal regulation. Like different plant species have different sensitivities to changes in water availability. And so chaparral species like manzanita, like ceanothus, chamise, those have different they have different leaf traits and rooting structures that allow them to tolerate less water and higher temperatures than, like, let's say, coast redwood and bishop pines that are larger plants, and have just evolved under cooler, wetter conditions. And so bishop pines are one species that are sensitive to changes in water availability, and they have what's called this isohydric. I don't know how much into this. Tell me if
Go
I'm
for it.
like,
Oh, go
oh
for
yeah.
it. Oh, no.
We love going deep.
Okay. We have Bishop Pine Forest here. You study them in Santa Cruz Island. Like, we want to hear all about
Okay.
them.
So they have a really, they're really conservative with their water loss. So when soil moisture declines, by some percent, and it causes their what's called water potential, which is like the tension by which water is being held in the plumbing of the plant. When that starts to get low, they will close their stomata and be like, nope, I'm not letting my water status drop below this point, because they will be at risk of hydraulic failure. So if they kept their stomates open, what would happen? There would be this constant loss of water through their leaves, and there would be embolisms or like bubbles that form in their plumbing. And
It's like their heart. It's like their blood pressure.
it's like their blood
Yeah,
pressure.
that's a good
Right, totally. That's a good analogy.
parallel.
Oh yeah, I never. Yeah. That's a good one. And so they're really sensitive to changes in water availability. And so the fog for them is pretty crucial for maintaining their water status. And there's a study that I did in grad school strongly suggested that that bishop pines are one mechanism by which they can absorb fog water is directly through their leaves, so foliar uptake. And this is actually a process that Todd Dawson's lab brought into the fog literature, and has found that foliar uptake can happen in redwoods and understory plants. And bishop pines are one of them that do this as well. Another way that plants get fog water is through the drip. So in fog,
I was just about to ask about that. Canopy,
all those water droplets deposit on the leaves, and then all of a sudden it's raining under a tree. Mm-hmm. And that's increasing soil moisture. And so it's not necessarily deep soil moisisture, but plants have shallow roots. It's not just their deep taproot. Take advantage of that.
Really interesting kind of observation I've made, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before and talks about fire, but we had our big Woodward fire out here some years back in 2021?
2020.
Uh-huh. I spent a lot of time on the trails out here on that ridgeline. I noticed after the fire and the canopy was burned, all that moisture that used to be collected on the ridgeline there.
Yeah.
It's now dry, and it's kind of changed the whole dynamics of the area a little bit in terms of what vegetation grows below. And just losing that canopy really, really kind of changed things.
Yes. Yeah. We should collaborate. Mm-hmm. I am so interested in this. I am so interested. I mean, it seems kind of like this, you know, obvious thing, but we don't really know. Like with an increase in fire intensity and frequency, especially in coastal regions which have historically been more buffered from high intensity wildfire, we're starting to see that, like the CZU in Santa Cruz, like the the Woodland fire?
Woodward fire, yeah.
Woodward fire. Right. Right, there's loss of this canopy. And what is the impact of loss of canopy on ecosystems? And so I'm actually one thread of research that I hope to integrate into the next few years while we have this funding opportunity, is to investigate those interactions between fire and fog dynamics.
Yeah, it seems like less is getting captured up there. And it seems like for some of our, like Mount Vision and some of our kind of peaks out there, it seems like it creates a whole watershed, that kind of capturing of the fog, and then it, you know, seems to trickle down into the soil and into streams. Like it really has a big impact on the whole watershed, I imagine.
Yeah. There's a paper from the Santa Cruz Mountains that has shown an increase in stream flow with fog events. And there was a farmer in mom brain. names escape me. I can't remember the farm, but it was like Central Coast, like between it was like near Half Moon Bay. And they definitely noticed changes in stream flow with fog events because, right, these trees are not drying up water as much during fog events.
Yeah.
Right. Their water demand decreases, and so there's more availability in the subsurface.
That's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. We do have to take a quick break. If you're just tuning in, this is the Westmoor Natural Star. We're talking fog with Sarah. And we got a song about fog. I think we'll play
before
right now.
Before we do that, I think we do have a message.
We got some messages.
I have one message.
All right, share with the world.
KWMR is underwritten by Bear Valley Cottage in Olema. Information on this self-catering cottage available at bearvalleycottage.com. I don't know why I can't say cottage this morning.
It's a tough one. Yeah.
And we had a few different selections for fog songs this morning. But what do we end up going with this?
Into the Mystic by Van Morrison.
That's right.
So we'll be back in a few minutes.
Born before the wind, also younger than the sun. Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sailed into the Mystic. Oh, I can now hear the sailors cry, smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the Mystic. And where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I wanna hear it. I don't have to fear it, and I wanna rock your gypsy soul, just like way back in the days of old. And magnificently we will fold into the Mystic. That foghorn, you know I will be coming home. Yeah, when that foghorn whistle blows, I gotta hear it. I don't have to fear it, and I wanna rock your gypsy soul, just like way back in the day. Together we will float into the Mystic.
We're back here on KWMR. This is the West Marin Naturalist Hour, 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, 92.3 San Geronimo Valley. We are talking fog. Liz, you want to start us off?
Yeah. So we've been just chatting about how important fog is to different ecosystems with our guest, Sarah Baguskas. And you have a collaborative project coming up or that you've started. So if you wanted to talk a little bit about like what your primary work is at the moment and sort mm-hmm. of vision of that work.
Yeah, totally. We are really grateful and fortunate to have received 5 years of funding.
Amazing.
Oh, nice. Total of $3.65 million
All right.
to study coastal fog. And that's spread across five different institutions, San Francisco State being one of the recipients. And I'm the PI or principal investigator for the school. And I collaborate closely with Andrew Oliphant, who is the director of School of the Environment and is instrumental in making things happen. He's a biometeorologist, so studies interaction between the atmosphere and surface and the interactions between them. And we have site, well, I'll quickly go through just who's involved, and I'll make a plug for our website where you can read more. Actually, let me just tell you what that is now. It's www. Can I do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
You
want
to do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
We want to know who all you're collaborating with. And yeah, plug that.
Like, wait,
plug away.
Can I do plugs?
Yeah.
Okay, plugging. www.coastalfogresearch.org. And we're the Pacific Coastal Fog Research Group. And so we've got a team from Indiana University studying using global climate models to basically get a handle on like how fog has changed in the past at really along the California coastline and how it will change in the future. Mm-hmm. So we need that modeling power in order to develop confident or predictions of coastal fog change in the future with a good level of confidence. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the data that we collect in the field about fog helps feed that model and inform it.
Which is super important to like have that data tell a story, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like both for mm-hmm. your research and then like policy change and stuff moving forward. So that's that sounds like a crucial piece of this collaboration is that data modeling.
Yeah.
It is. It really is. Yeah. Nail on the head for sure. And then we work with a team at UC San Diego, Scripps Institution of Oceanography. Yeah. Rachel Klemscher is the lead there. And she does spatial temporal, basically makes fog climatologies using remote sensing. So her and the Indiana team work closely together because they operate at similar scales and basically help. Yeah, she does like, her work is like spatially explicit, mm-hmm. right? And then Dan Fernandez at CSU Monterey Bay is the fog harvesting master. Mm-hmm. So he has installs these and modifies the design of standard passive fog collectors. And we have two now in your neck of the woods.
Oh,
in so Point Reyes.
Can you describe a fog collector a little more?
Yeah, I'm curious myself here.
I've heard of like fog nets, but you know, this fog collector sounds a little more
Yeah. I wish I could like transmit the image to your listeners, but briefly, it's a 1 by 1 meter mesh screen, and the mesh is important. It's this mesh that's just known for having a high efficiency of fog water deposition or capture. And it's situated 2 meters off of the ground. So it's up there, stabilized. And so, and it's oriented to the prevailing wind. And so when the fog rolls in, the fog water droplets deposit on this mesh and drip down into a trough below this mesh square that's, and it's angled such that it goes into, it runs into a, basically a rain gauge.
Okay.
Okay.
It's not rain. And so tipping bucket. And, so it's collecting information about the fog water flux or how much water is actually in this fog event. And we have Well, there was already a fog collector at the UC Natural Reserve, Point Reyes Station, Nolima. There was one there set up by a UC Berkeley team. And then we added our own to that site. And we have another one near the Cypress Tunnel
Oh, yeah.
at Point Reyes National. So yeah, both the UC Reserve System and the Park Service have been like incredibly great and helpful in getting our supporting this research effort. So thanks to them in permitting access, we're able to monitor fog in Point Reyes. And so we'll have to stay tuned with amounts. Can we let's book another
Oh yeah,
time
absolutely.
when we
For sure.
actually have
Please,
some
totally.
Super
Right.
welcome update shows.
I'll just finish the team and then get to what we're doing real quick. And then UC Santa Cruz, there's Peter Weiss, who's leading the effort to understand the chemistry of fog and what's like the life in the fog, like microbes.
I hadn't really
That
thought
sounds
much about
fascinating.
microbes in fog, but
That's what gives us
it
that
changes
dewy
everything, right?
glow.
It
It's
changes
like
everything. Well, and Peter has found, I don't know if you've seen headlines about this, but there's mercury in fog.
No, never heard
Really? Heavy metals?
Yeah, and they're not gonna not don't worry, you're not breathing it. You're not it's not
Can I'm just fascinated by the
not
concept that
harmful.
like a heavy metal
Yeah.
can
I know,
like
I think
get
about
caught
mercury in
up
the
in
mud and like super low.
It's basically it's derived over the ocean and then goes through transformations in the fog itself that is it has like he's found that like lichen are really good indicate like sampling lichen gives you an indication of the concentration, right? Because lichens are only getting their moisture from the air. And so he's been doing lichen sampling to understand spatial patterns of the chemistry of fog.
Oh, that's cool.
That is really cool.
Well, send him an email.
And
Let
then,
can we get an email introduction to have him on our show?
Oh, sure.
I've never really thought about just microbial life and using fog as a way to of try. Well, actually, oh, that actually, I'll let you finish your thought. I have
No,
another
no.
question. In terms of like
Oh, you
nutrient
got it. Yeah.
exchange from like the oceans to land, does fog
Yeah.
play a role in that? Or act as a
Yeah.
catalyst?
Yeah, there's great question. There's been quite a bit of work on nitrogen in fog and nitrogen deposition, nitrogen being a limiting nutrient. And so
That's fascinating.
Kathleen Weathers at the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies back east has done a lot of work in that regard. And we're just going to keep learning here. We're just going to keep learning, and it can be exciting what's in the fog. And also, if you're going over agricultural areas, like, right, pesticide, herbicide potential
Can
being
get caught up in there.
carried is, So we're looking into that. And then there's the San Francisco State team, and we're studying surface microclimate. Like what's going on in the physical environment, kind of close to the ground, with respect to fog, in terms of radiation or energy exchange between the atmosphere and the earth, what happens to the light, what happens to the temperature and relative humidity. And so fog is so much more than just like this water source. To these ecosystems, but also changes the environment in other important ways. Like what we found in the strawberry research is that strawberry plants have a higher what's called water use efficiency during fog events than on clear sky days, because what happens is that so they're fixing or they're photosynthesizing to kind of to a similar degree as they are in clear sky days, but they're losing less water. And even though the light is lower, what happens is that there's more diffuse light. So you're wearing a baseball cap on a sunny day and it's casting this like sharp, dark harsh shadow on your face, and it's like doing its job. On a foggy day, you're still fair game to get a little sunburn, even with a baseball cap on, because that light is scattered and is entering, getting on your face, even though you have a hat on, right? Because it's scattered. Same thing with plants. There's more scattered. There's scattering of light, and there's more light entering the canopy, like deeper in the canopy, and is engaging more leaves in photosynthesis.
Really?
So, like, as That's a whole plant, they're like game on. They're can photosynthesize quite a bit, but lose less water, like we already talked about.
So that's one of the reasons why people tend to get sunburn on those cloudy, foggy days. The light is getting scattered.
Yeah. So PR, whatever, public service announcement: wear sunscreen on foggy days.
Yeah. Anecdotally, we have to remind people. Yeah.
Yeah. On the water, it's one of those things where not only are you getting bounced off the water, but you're again getting radiation from the fog. So it's like it's people get it all the time. Like, well, I had my hat and I applied. You're like, well, it's the tricky days.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen people get the most sunburn on the cloudiest days out here.
Yeah, totally, because they're like, whatever, it's cloudy, but...
But the plants prove it.
Yeah.
So when you're doing your...
So yeah, we have a really exciting team. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, so when you're doing your research, have you found that, like, the native plants have, like, are able to, like, get more water from the fog than the invasive plants, or any differences between those?
I am so glad you asked. So now I get to share what my master student is doing, Harvey Hightower. Yeah. He is leading research, actually right by in a Holcus lanata. Lanata? Oh, gosh, I forget the...
Where?
Lanata.
Loganita.
Velvet grass.
Oh,
yes.
There's a pretty pervasive grass, velvet grass, that is I'm choosing words carefully here.
Yeah.
Has been expanding with changes in land use in White Rays, and we're interested in how fog is interacting with this species that is really becoming dominant in the grasslands at Point Reyes, and how that compares to native plant response to fog water. And so this particular grass has like really huge biomass and has feathery seeds, and I think has a lot of potential to capture fog water. And so we're investigating how fog interacts with this invasive species in terms of like how does it affect its carbon and water relations. And so Harvey is working on that research as we speak, and we'll be presenting work at the American Geophysical Union in December.
I love that.
So stay tuned, Point Reyes, for more information.
That's actually, we want to do a whole episode on grasslands in the future, you know, so, and like just the, talking about like how they're getting their water and their nutrients, you know, is like one of the main conversations. So that's really cool.
It sounds like you're really pioneering a lot of research on such an integral part of our daily life out here. And it seems like there's a lot of holes in or gaps in our knowledge on the interplay of fog and it seems like it's short story long. It sounds like you're kind of pioneering a lot of new research.
Yeah, we are, and we have this opportunity to. You know, it's been a tricky thing to have sustained funding on fog. Like, you know, I've had like 2-year grants here, 1-year grant there, but I mean, it doesn't seem like a huge amount of time. But to have this institutional like network of really great people to address these fundamental questions over a 5-year period is, it gets us really, we're stoked.
I love that.
Yeah, and we actually made it 10:30 today, so
well, and actually,
it's a foggy morning.
And it's already getting close to the end. So if folks are really interested in like in your research and they want to get more involved, well, I know it sounds like you guys got a big grant, so but if they want to donate or get involved with their time, is there a way people can get involved?
Yeah, I would say I don't know what the mechanism would be for donations, but I won't say no to that. We just have to figure it out. But, you know, time is of equal, if not more value, mm-hmm. oftentimes. And so reach out to me via email, and that is the best way to get plugged in, and we can figure out ways to get involved.
Nice.
It is seasonal work.
That's great. You know, a lot of times we get a lot of folks who like to volunteer their time, especially if, you know, something like this. It's so interesting and so close to home. Can you remind folks your website again?
Oh, yeah. my website. Can I give my email?
Oh,
while
yeah.
I'm making sure I give the right website.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. There's Weebly in it. Okay. So my email is bagusks@sfsu.edu. You can look me up by going to the School of the Environment website at San Francisco State under faculty. And my website, which I really should update the name, the-Boguscus, my last name, -lab.weebly.com.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious just for kind of a bigger picture. Well, one, I know we're in the midst of going into a super El Nino this year, and I'm curious if the role fog could potentially change, you know, with this big super El Nino event that we're going into. I heard there's potentially going to be more humidity in the air, you know, in the fall.
That's a good question. There's been some work kind of trying to see if there's a relationship between rainy winter and fog frequency summer. And there just isn't much of a correlation to speak of. But what I would say for sure is that when you have, you know, the rainfall sets the stage, right, for what the summertime is going to look like. And so the magnitude or the degree to which fog is kind of affecting these ecosystems is a function of what the residual water is from the wintertime. And so if you have a really wet winter, you know, not to downplay fog, but the plants are going to be primarily kind of riding that wave of the winter precipitation. That said, you know, if fog weren't around, that water would evaporate, transpire really quickly. So fog is still important even after a rainy winter in kind of extending that
retaining that
water year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right? Interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we need the fog.
Right. Talking about fog, do people, I know there are fog nets where people collect the water. Is that like shown to be like fruitful at all or what?
Yeah. Well, Chile is light years ahead of us in terms of really developing quite sustainable systems for fog water capture, especially in the Atacama Desert, the driest place on Earth that's influenced by fog.
Yeah.
And so I visited a research station, Alto Patache, in this northern part of Chile near Iquique, the town of Iquique. And their field station, there's a university field station that is completely and entirely fed by fog water.
That's amazing.
These
wow.
humongous fog.
I'm glad we're mentioning this because I was really curious if that technology is viable for, you know, human and agricultural use. It sounds like it is, or it has potential to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It has potential to be. And we are collaborating with our Chilean friends to hopefully develop a fog water harvesting map for California and be like, where are the best spots to mm-hmm. potentially harvest water? And both Peter Weiss and Dan Fernandez have been more actively involved than I have been in working with the Pacifica Water District. Pacifica, just yeah. teeny bit south of mm-hmm. San Francisco. There's a place, Malagra Ridge, that gets tons of fog. It's like 240 liters of water, if I'm not mistaken, in wow. The season. So lots of water coming in there. And there's interest in starting to like supplement water that we use with fog water. So I think the more we deepen ourselves in our climate change crisis, the more creative and sustainable we must become.
Absolutely.
And that's really evident, like in Chile, in the Atacama, like these people like need water.
Yeah.
And they want to grow vegetables. And so they're coming up with these solutions
That's
that are working for them.
Yeah. I was so curious. I'm glad Dallas mentioned that. I was so curious on the viability of some technology like that.
Is there a lot of salt in our fog out here, I'm assuming? You know, like
that's... Yes. Right. So you got to know what's in it right. before yeah. you start like chugging
right.
it.
Right.
Totally. But there's like vodka. Like people, there's, you know, the like vodka made from fog water.
What? I did not know that.
I did not know that.
I am not a drinker. I really am not. Yeah, I don't drink. I'll have like one beer once a month, maybe. But like, it just so happens that there are quite a bit of like the alcohol industry. There's Carl the Fog Hazy IPA. I don't think it's made from fog water, but it still touts, you know.
That's right. I mean, good thing we mentioned the name, Carl. You know, is that Carl just for the city for the fog? I know that we voted that it was voted for to name Carl, the, you know, like the name of the fog. Is that for the entire Bay Area, or because we don't really call it Carl out here, I've noticed.
Yeah, it might just be Bay Area. That's actually a good question. I'm going to be talking about it, Carl, on Thursday, and I should really read up on his spatial extent.
Yeah. Right,
I think
we're still Bay Area
people.
We're still Bay Area, but we just don't really call it fog. We don't really call it Carl.
Are you Bay Area?
Oh,
are you Bay Area?
I think we're classified as
yeah,
North Bay.
It's technically North Bay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
North Bay. Okay.
Yeah.
Is Santa Cruz Bay Area?
Yeah. Maybe
I don't know if it. I'm not sure. I know it's there's 9 counties that are considered yeah. Bay Area, and Marin County is one of them, where the farthest mm-hmm. western reaches, which mm-hmm. is maybe why we haven't adopted the Carl, you know, name.
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But we are still
yeah. I mean,
Bay Area.
Yeah. Maybe we should delete that section because I am in a geography department.
I love that.
But I don't know. It's the Bay Area is so like elusive to me. I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, there's geography and then there's like cultural and there's different definitions,
right.
I think, of Bay Area.
Totally.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, we have to wrap up here, but we would love to have you back on to hear how the research is going. And
yes.
I would love to come back.
Yeah. And yeah. Okay. For sure. We'll make it happen. Because I feel like any of these kind of just subtopics on fog, we can go down a full hour rabbit hole on too. So you know,
especially when it's so new,
yeah.
you know. So
yeah.
we're talking at the beginning of this research. So yeah. and if you have any new breakthroughs or updates, let us know. Yeah. We're happy to have you back on, yeah. or even just send us an email.
Excellent. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for highlighting coastal fog in your community. And, you know, like, it's really, for me, this is the most meaningful interaction about how the work that I do actually.
Oh, great.
Like,
that means
yeah.
it's all yours. Yeah. Thank. Awesome.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Well, all right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Okay.
And
yeah, thanks so much for your questions.
All right.
Of course. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Have a good podcast.
Thanks, y'all.
And we'll see y'all in a couple of weeks.
All right.